David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Hi, hello everybody, and this is Stacey Chalemi from The Advisor. Today I'm very excited because we will have one of our podcast community hosts. He has a podcast of his own on our channel, and he is the founder of Moral Eats. His name is Sander Van Stee. He has a passion for regenerative agriculture, and I'm so glad to have him on the show today. He is one of our famous guests. He is very popular, and people love to hear what he has to say because he has such an insight on agriculture, food, health, and many more topics. Today, he'd like to talk about the future of agriculture and how regenerative agriculture can help our world and how it could be the future of our world today. So, Sander, why don't you tell everybody a little about yourself and, you know, tell us about your thoughts today about changing the world with regenerative agriculture.
Absolutely. I have a unique perspective on it because I see it from both sides of the agriculture fence, basically. I grew up on a commercial dairy farm. I still run a commercial dairy farm. But then on the side now, we're trying to grow the regenerative managed part of our farm. With hopefully the goal is to grow our brand, grow Moral Eats to the point where we can transition our entire farm over to regenerative agriculture practices. There are some huge advantages to regenerative agriculture. It's very sustainable, and it helps to improve the environment by sequestering those greenhouse gases and storing them in the soil. And then also there's lots of benefits for the welfare perspective of it. And that's something that I'm personally very passionate about, is trying to improve the lives of farm animals. That's the mission of Moral Eats. And then also there's huge benefits as far as nutrient density, the health of the food that we actually produce, because in the past 70, 80 years, there's been a continuous trend to a decrease in the nutrient density in the food that we find in our grocery store. So regenerative agriculture has the ability to fix a lot of issues that we have with commercial agriculture. With that being said, though, commercial agriculture has its own strengths. And I feel like whenever I hear other people speaking about it in the regenerative space, it's something that I find is commonly missed, where like commercial agriculture is the way it is for a reason. It's responding to supply and demand. And there's a strong demand for the way food is produced in commercial agriculture. And that is basically efficiency and scale. You need to feed the whole world, but also you need to do it in a way that people can afford to buy their groceries. And if there is any weakness to regenerative agriculture, that would be the main one, is that it's still a premium product. It costs more to produce food in this way. And for example, when you're feeding grass-fed animals, they live on average to be 24, 25, 26 months old, whereas grain-finished steers are finished at 15, 16 months of age. So you're feeding these animals for a longer period of time, which increases the cost. You have more feed costs. Ultimately, I also just like it because they live a longer life. That's a huge plus from a welfare perspective. But with those extra costs, you had to kind of push those costs down the road in order to still be profitable. And then the consumer ultimately ends up paying that price. So if there is a weakness to regenerative agriculture, that's what it is.
It's really amazing because I feel like, a lot of farms are going towards the regenerative agriculture, and, you know, times have been changing and people's overlook on health has been changing as well. And we talked about many topics. We've hit where, you know, healthy diets and how healthy diets should include, you know, different meats and different sources of nutrition in order to stay healthy. And that has a little bit of controversy because you have the vegans and you have the you have people who are vegetarians who feel differently, but you definitely see a difference with regenerative agriculture, the way they take care of the animals, the way they feed they feed the animals, how the milk is healthier, the meats are healthier. You know, because in the past, you know, we've had lots of tests on children, you know, were, you know, especially young ladies were going through menstruation at a very young age. Their hormones were changing. You know, they were developing faster than the norm. And a lot of it had to do with the hormones they were putting in the cow's milk and the hormones that a lot of these commercial, farms were putting in the chickens, and they were putting in the animals, and you know, so it's, you know, regenerative agriculture is definitely something that we need to you know, have the world convert to, and it seems like we are in the right step, because a lot of farms, you know, you're located in Ontario, where but a lot of farms all over the place are starting to change the way they do things. Do you feel like that also?
Yeah, it's a massive trend, and it's a very positive trend too. And it's coming from the farming perspective, but also from the consumer end of things. There's a push towards regenerative agriculture from both ends. And it's great. It's a very powerful movement, and it's a very positive movement. And this kind of coincides with the consumer's demand for local products and trying to source their food from local farmers. And it's a very positive and an amazing trend that I'd like to see continue. One of the things that concerns me, though, is like when this part was necessary for this whole local scene, is that the farmers need to learn to market their products, and they have to sell their products direct to consumers. Mm-hmm. And I unfortunately see a lot of explanations and a lot of marketing or just publicity, and then they speak in a way that kind of smears commercial agriculture. So it seems like there's this animosity from the regenerative agriculture, or just from local farmers that are trying to sell direct, towards commercial agriculture. And ultimately, I don't think it's very productive,
right?
Because if the goal is to take what we're learning in regenerative agriculture and use that to feed the entire world, you kind of need commercial agriculture to come along for the ride. Yeah. All those farmers and that own these larger scale farms, or not even necessarily just larger, but just are producing food for the commercial market, they're not just going to get up and disappear all of a sudden and make way for all these farmers that are have a market for and are able to market their products direct to consumer. They're not just going to disappear. So what would ultimately happen is, like, yeah, your local farms that do a good job finding customers, they're going to grow to the point where they look a little more similar to a commercial farm. And then the commercial farms, they're not set in stone. It's not an unchanging business. Like, and like, as if you look even 10, 20, 30 years or 100 years, commercial agriculture is constantly changing and improving. And it's going to take tips and tricks and take those lessons from regenerative agriculture. And over time, we'll find ways to apply that to commercial agriculture. So then overall, like over time, these two movements are basically going to become one. And that's ultimately the solution to feeding the world. It's not one or the other. It's commercial agriculture starting to resemble regenerative agriculture and adopt management practices that are more sustainable. And then the local regenerative farms growing to the point where they resemble the commercial farms, and they find more efficiencies, and start to scale up and drive the cost down ultimately of food that's produced in this way.
I think, you know, our society is on the right road, and if you know, I feel that it has to be ways that we can communicate with the commercial farms and make them see that regenerative agriculture is the way to go, and that it, overall, it will benefit everybody. It will benefit them and the consumer as well. And have you seen any of the farms and commercial farms trying to communicate and trying to get together as one to try to make some type of compromises and changes in the farming industry?
A lot of it is done through social media and stuff like that, and general education and putting the word out there. And there is lots of education with things that do work that are being taught to the average commercial farmer. Like, I see a lot of information out there about rotational grazing and the benefits. And also there's an awful lot of information out there about things like cover cropping, like basically not having just monocrops, but having like, having other species planted together with those cash crops, those monocrops, and having it so you improve the diversity. And there's a huge push towards less tillage, less disturbance in the soil, which is great for regenerative culture and regenerating the soils. Mm-hmm. So like there's definitely a push towards it. And it also comes from the government too. Like, the government is incentivizing these initiatives of trying to stimulate the purchases of different equipment that does less tillage or allows you for more species being planted at the same time. So I do see a lot of it. And the problem is there's something that's usually missing. Like, there's a lot of puzzle pieces that you need to follow in order for there to be true payback for those efforts.
Right.
And you look at regenerative agriculture, there's five principles that you typically try to follow. And that is, you want to maximize the biodiversity.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
On that land, the plants and the insects and the animals, you want to minimize disturbances of any sort, and that can include tillage, but also just spraying with fertilizers or herbicides and pesticides. All of those impacts have a negative effect on the soil health and the biology, the microorganisms in the soil. And then you want to have living roots in the soil year round. Which is really important, because those microorganisms that where the soil health really turns on and is really dependent for making the system work, they only live in association with living roots. So if there's devoid of life, if there's no living roots, well, then the microorganisms can't grow either. Right. So that's really important. And then you also need to have some sort of armor on the soil. You can't just have bare soil. You need to have plants that are protecting the soil from the sunlight and preventing it from drying up, and because like the dry, hot soil, microorganisms can't thrive in that environment either. And then the last principle that you try to follow with regenerative agriculture is you have animal impact. And what you typically see in the regenerative space is you see farmers that produce animal products, because when you have rotational grazing, you naturally follow all of these principles.
Yeah.
You almost do it by accident, as long as you're rotationally grazing. So that's typically what you see in the regenerative agriculture space. But you can apply these, you can apply these principles not only to producing animal products, but also to producing fruits and vegetables and even row crops. You can take these principles and you can apply it. It's just more difficult, and you have to be more intentional. But what I see typically with all these initiatives that are pushed by the government and farmers that are experimenting with it is they have their row crop system, and then they'll say, okay, I'll plant some cover crops into that. And then they make that investment. They buy the seed, they fertilize it, whatever else. And then over time, they say like, well, I'm spending this extra money, but I'm not seeing anything in return, because they're still dependent on that fertilizer.
Yeah.
There's not a massive improvement in soil organic matter. So like the commercial farmer, the typical one that's just trying out these initiatives that are being pushed, doesn't get much results from it.
Right.
They see it because they don't have all the puzzle pieces in place. So unfortunately, And then like there's research backing up that decision as well. There's lots of research starting to come out now with, because like these cover cropping has been a push for quite a while now. There's results out now.
Right.
And it's basically been shown that there is not really that much of an improvement in organic soil matter or in the soil health. Like, so it's kind of hard for these farmers to justify that investment when there's no return. Cause like, especially agriculture as a whole, but like farming, there's very low returns. You're working on a really small margin. So like it's difficult to justify those investments when you don't really see a return. So it kind of peters out and right. People kind of stick to what works. But like, in order for it to work, the commercial agriculture really needs to learn from the regenerative space and see what's working on a small scale and see how we can scale that up and put all the pieces together, because that's what's missing. And it's something that I'm struggling with personally as well, because I'm trying to take what I'm learning from the regenerative side of our farm and apply it to the commercial side of our farm.
Right.
And like, a lot of the challenges are like, you, in order to do things on a large scale, especially like with row cropping, you have this large equipment so that you can efficiently harvest your crops. But all those heavy equipments, it comes with compaction and large wheels, and like that efficiency comes at a cost of doing some sort of damage to your soil, some right. sort of disturbance that you're trying to avoid. And that's one of the principles of soil health. So like, and there's other realities as well. Like you want to have, in order to harvest your crops efficiently on a larger scale, you need to have a whole bunch of one crop ripe and ready to go at one time. So mm-hmm. you're pushed towards monocropping, single species, a lack of diversity. So like it's a real challenge.
Yeah.
And so like, but there is hope, because there is a couple of scientists, Johnson and Sue, that developed a very unique way of composting.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Johnson Sue compost. And when you compost it this way, you're really creating a unique environment for microorganisms to thrive, especially the fungal part of right. it, because fungus is typically what's really missing in soils. There's still, even the soils that are very disturbed, they still have quite a population of bacteria.
Right. Maybe
not a population of bacteria, but there's a lot of bacteria there still. But you want to add the fungal life, and then also the higher categories of life in that food chain, like the worms and the insects. But you need to add that to the soil to kind of kickstart it.
Yes.
And what you can do with this Johnson Sue compost, it's unique because you provide a lot of organic matter, a lot of carbon, and then you don't turn it. You don't disturb it in any way, because as soon as you do, the fungus dies off. It's a fungal life that's very sensitive to disturbances in any way. So it's basically what it looks like is you have a compost pile with tubes in it. And then these tubes, you can remove the tubes after the compost sets. But okay. You have channels of oxygen coming into the compost. And so you can have air constantly coming into the compost without turning it.
Right.
And you let it sit for a very, very long time. You let it mature. And then you end up with this amazingly this amazing compost with has a huge concentration of microorganisms in it. And then you can take that compost and you can wash off the life. You can wash the microorganisms into something that you would call a tea.
Yeah.
And then you have this liquid of biodiversity that you can apply to the field with your typical equipment.
Wow.
So it's a real opportunity to scale this up, and you only need about a pound of compost per acre of land. So like, oh, wow. you can really scale this up very, very well. And farmers are doing this. They're experimenting with it and they're applying it. And when you have that diversity and you apply it, even in an imperfect farm or imperfect system where yeah. you've done action, you kickstart that diversity that which would normally take years to build up with proper management.
Right.
And all of a sudden, all at once. And then all of a sudden, you can start seeing the benefits of soil health quick.
Yeah.
And what you see then is like, now you have that diversity there. Now the plants, as long as you don't apply first synthetic fertilizers, that plant can now has that diversity of microorganisms in the soil, where the plant can ask those microorganisms for nutrients,
right?
And you can have a system where you can get away from fertilizer. You get a payback for your efforts,
mm-hmm.
because you're no longer needing to buy as many synthetic fertilizers, and then you have a plant that has this relationship with the microorganisms. And then you still need to apply those other principles as best you can. You need to have food and protection and stuff like that. And you need to have those living roots to keep that life going. But you kickstarted it so you can actually see the benefits of the cover cropping, of the minimum tillage or no tillage.
Right.
And you can have all those puzzle pieces together, and you can start seeing the benefits where you can decrease your fertilizers, you can have improved nutrient density of the food being produced, because when you use synthetic fertilizer, the plant no longer needs the microorganisms to get nutrients. It no longer needs that relationship. The microorganisms die off, and the plant still grows because you're applying the synthetic fertilizers. You're giving it the minimum of what it needs to grow. But that is where that minimum of is where you create the lack of nutrient density in that food, because you can never fertilize for every single micronutrient that can be found in the soil. So that's where you run into problems. And that new initiative of innovation of this highly specific compost and applying it to your field, you're not applying nutrients, you're applying biodiversity to the field. That, I feel, is a key to being able to scale this to the commercial farms and allowing these really large commercial farms to take a step towards regeneration and improving soil health, soil, and really seeing it where you can produce a lot of food and produce it efficiently. And then that's really a case where everybody wins, where you have the best of both worlds, where you have the efficiency of scale and the efficiency of just like of producing food in that way. So you have the lower cost for the consumer.
Yeah.
But then you also still have the benefits of the soil health and the environment and the welfare of the animals.
Yeah.
But like the one thing that would have to happen.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Is a lot of these commercial farms, a consequence of them pushing for efficiency, is that they also are typically hyper specialized. Okay. And one thing that you really see with regenerative agriculture is more of a generalization. You'll see one producer, one farm producing all sorts of different products. And it's one of those principles of soil health where you want that biodiversity, which then leads to having a diverse source of income.
Right.
That's something that commercial agriculture can adopt, but either by these farmers, these specialized farmers becoming more generalized, or more likely partnerships between farmers where you have the ones that are specialized for certain like cow-calf operations or producing beef, and then the crop farmer that specializes in producing just your soy and your beans and your corn and wheat, and that's all they produce. They can work together. The crop farmer can plant cover crops for after the cash crop, and then the beef farmer can graze that, and everybody wins. The beef farmer has some feed for their cattle, and then the commercial person that's producing all those row crops and the cash crops, they have the benefits of the manure from those cattle and from the improvements of their soil health by having that animal impact.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Is the government getting involved where they're making some standard laws, or they're making commercial farms go in a more natural route, a more healthier route?
They are, but like I was saying before, it's their initiatives are not quite working at the moment, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So So, like, and they're not necessarily doing it by enforcing it with laws, but they're trying to stimulate the adoption of things like cover cropping and minimum tillage or no tillage, and the purchase of they might help you with the purchase of certain equipment that allows for less tillage and stuff like that. That's like, but like the government, they unfortunately, because regenerative agriculture is so new and the possibilities are still yet to be conclusively proven, especially at a larger scale, the government really doesn't know what to stimulate or how to stimulate it or what works and what doesn't, because commercial agriculture doesn't even know yet. It's still basically a secret held by regenerative agriculture that needs to be applied further to and once you start seeing commercial farms adopt, like especially like the early adopters in commercial agriculture adopt these regenerative practices, and then they start showing what works on a commercial scale, that's typically when the government will step in and say, oh, okay, we'll stimulate this is for broad adoption. But yeah, there is a push. There's a lot of political interest in more sustainable ways of producing food, especially lately with a lot of political interest just in the environment as a whole, and a lot of those goals that people set for our emissions and stuff like that.
That's good to know. And for consumers, can you explain to consumers the benefits of having food from regenerative agriculture farms that focus on regenerative agriculture?
Yeah, there's a measurable difference. There's certain different ways that you can measure it. One is just like with a really quick and dirty, you can something called BRICS meter, where you can measure the sugar content of liquids, and you can see that there's way more solids in liquid form in the sap of these plants that are produced with regenerative management practices. And it's not just like the sugars, it's not just sweeter, because like the plant, it uses sugars to transport minerals through the plant. And so the sugars is a pretty decent marker for overall nutrient density, not just the sugars. And so you can measure the nutrient density, the amount of minerals and vitamins, using the solid content as a proxy with these BRICS meters. But you can also measure it in a more exact way. There's been research done where they've compared the meat or the muscle of these animals that are raised with regenerative practices, being grass-fed and grass-finished, to the ones that are the way that are typically raised and finished on just grain. And if they take a biopsy of the muscle of these animals and compare the two of them, you see in the grass-fed animals, you see less evidence of aging. They're healthier. You see less glycation end products, less proteolysis, less oxidative stress. And then not surprisingly, if you analyze these biopsies closer, that translates into a healthier food. So you have more of your vitamin A and your vitamin E, and you have more omega-3 fatty acids. You have more just general minerals and stuff like that. But also there's things called phytonutrients that can be found in a greater concentration. And phytonutrients are basically compounds that are originated from plants, but you can find them in the meat. And they have a long list of different benefits if you consume these phytonutrients. A lot of them are centered around being anti-inflammatory or antioxidants, which is important, because if you really look at the root cause of disease, many people say that it could potentially be inflammation as a root cause, as of all disease basically being inflammation. So those anti-inflammatories and those antioxidants, those phytonutrients do play a big role. And what I find fascinating is that you don't only find phytonutrients from plants, you find the nutrients from the fungus and for the microorganisms in the soil that make its way all the way up the food chain to the meat that's on your plate. So, and that's been measured with mass spectrometry. Like, you can see the difference. It's not just theory. You can measure it.
That's amazing. That's truly amazing. Because I think people have to understand the difference, because I think a lot of people, they just buy food and they don't really think about, where the, I think that it's gotten better, but a lot of people don't realize when they're buying it from a farm, they automatically think you know, it's going to be healthy. But they have to really know their farmer and understand how they're raising the food and what they're doing, you know, and that makes a big difference on a person's health, you know, is how farmers are raising their food, how they're feeding their animals, how they're creating their plants. You know, it all has an impact when you put it in your body.
Yeah, and if you look at like the world population, especially in North America, as a whole, there's a real issue with health and chronic disease, which in my opinion stems from basically the general population being overfed, but yet being undernourished.
Yes.
So you're eating foods that have calories, taste amazing, but are devoid of nutrition or have very low amounts of nutrition.
Yes.
So when I was talking about that you can make a difference in the nutrient density of food, that's getting at the root cause of all of the chronic disease that we're seeing in the developed world. So like we need to move as a population away from all these hyper-processed, hyper-palatable food and move towards eating just real whole foods. But then also those whole foods need to be produced in a way that they have that improved nutrient density that you would expect from whole foods, where you, when you're trying to eat this way and eat it in a healthier way, where you're trying to maximize the nutrient density, you want the food itself to max out that nutrient density as well because of the way it's managed and produced.
Right, exactly. And I see, you know, a lot of problems. I see a lot of overweight people in the United States. I see when we go to restaurants, they have very large portions, a lot of these restaurants, you know, and there's a lot of processed foods in America. And like we had talked in a couple episodes ago, you know, in our country, when you go to other countries, a lot of the food that they make in America are banned in other countries. And that tells you, you know, some facts right there, pretty scary ones. And people have to really understand where they're getting their food. And, you know, and I like farm markets. I like farm markets because, you know, you're getting a healthier version of a product and it's better for your body. But, you know, you want to make sure that, you know, the farm is, you know, a regenerative farm, that they're producing, you know, the plants and the animals and the you know, everything that they're selling is created in a healthy manner, don't you think?
That's right. Yeah. And yeah, because like just because a farm is local doesn't necessarily mean that they're producing it with regenerative management practices. It's a fairly recent trend. And especially, like I said, like rotational grazing is pretty simple to follow the principles. But when you start buying products like fruits and vegetables, you must be far more intentional in the way in producing it so that you do follow regenerative agriculture. Like it's difficult, but not impossible to produce vegetables without tillage.
Right.
You do it basically by laying down a really deep bed of compost. And then you grow your vegetables in that compost, and then you don't never actually have to till the soil, so you can still produce your vegetables in a way where you're not tilling, you're not doing it in ways that damage or damage the soil in any way, or decrease the organic matter, or decrease the nutrient density of the food that's produced. You can still use these principles. You just have to be more intentional. And it's not necessarily that common, even amongst farms, but it is possible to do it without tillage. And then, because like vegetables, especially farmers that specialize in growing vegetables, it's unique in how much nutrients you're selling. You're basically growing vegetables and usually it's pretty dense. So you're removing a lot of nutrition from the soil and in the form of vegetables and selling it to people. So that's why you need to be careful on how you produce it. And then, so having this deep bed of compost where you're growing vegetables in, as opposed to directly in the soil, allows you to, and you can constantly top up this compost every couple of years or something like that. So it allows you to produce vegetables in a way where you're still benefiting the soil health.
Right. Is there questions you should ask your farmer if you go to a farmer's market? Are there specific things that you should ask?
Yeah, you can walk around and see. Like a good sign is that there's a diverse amount of products. That's a good sign to start off with, just from a distance. But you can ask things, like for any animal products, you ask, "Hey, were these animals rotationally grazed?" That'd be a really easy question to ask that gives you an answer right away if it's regenerative or not, and produced in a way that maximizes that nutrient density. But for fruits and vegetables, you can ask if they till the soil, because as soon as as you start doing that tillage, you're no longer following those regenerative practices. And it's not necessarily all of a sudden that means that food is completely devoid of nutrition. There are lots of gray areas, and it's not black and white. There's still ways that you can produce food with tillage that improves the nutrient density. Like organic production actually helps quite a bit with soil health. It does improve soil health to some degree, just not as much. It's not the gold standard, basically, that what you would have with no tillage and using a lot of organic practices, even if it's not classified as organic. But those are my two questions. For vegetables, is there tillage? And then for animal products, is it done raised with rotational grazing? So whether it be pork, turkey, chicken, beef, that'd be what I would ask. And then yeah, and that would basically those two questions would answer whether or not it's broadly following regenerative agriculture practices.
Now, if you had to sum up everything that we talked about today, what would you like to emphasize? Some takeaways you'd like to leave the audience with?
I would hope that people would listen to this and be optimistic for the future. Change is happening. Change is constantly happening, and I'm very optimistic with the future. And I have a pretty unique perspective on things because I grew up on a commercial farm, and I'm moving towards regenerative practices. Change is happening, and in my eyes, from my perspective, the future looks bright. The future looks positive. There is change happening, and we're breaking the norms, and we're learning from basically our weaknesses. And yeah, I'm excited, and I really feel like especially for commercial agriculture, this unique compost, the Johnson Soup compost, will play a key role in really improving the not only the nutrient density of food, but also the affordability of the nutrient dense food.
And what is, can you tell us a little about your website, Moral Eats, and what it consists of, and some of the services you provide?
Moral Eats is my passion project, where the mission is really centered around improving animal welfare, improving the lives of farm animals. So we specialize very much on producing animal products. So we have grass-fed meats and turkey, that's pastured turkey and pastured pork, as well as sustainably sourced seafood. And that's really what we specialize in. And like everything that we produce and that we sell on our website is used as a vehicle for improving animal welfare. So I stumbled more on regenerative agriculture by accident when I was researching animal welfare and things that I could do, I could make. And I found that regenerative agriculture is a good way. There's a lot of just by following those principles is a good way to improve welfare as a whole, as far as like longevity and also just the experiences of those animals being out on pasture, being able to have that experience that they didn't have before. So yeah, we have like the products that we have available is like the grass-fed beef is it's rotationally grazed, and there it's unique because all of those animals are actually sourced from the dairy industry, which has greater opportunity if we take what's possible with rotationally grazing and grass-fed, grass-finished beef, and using that on with the bull calves of the dairy industry, which normally is not possible because dairy animals are bred to the extreme for being able to efficiently produce milk. But ours are crossbreds with beef animals, so they still have enough of that genetics from the beef side that I'm able to finish them on beef, so that we can have those improvements in welfare that we see from beef cows and use it to make a big difference in the welfare of the bull calves of the dairy industry. And then we use similar manner of practices for our turkeys, which they follow behind our grass-fed beef, it mimics the natural systems that you would see, where there'd be these massive herds of bison and all these wild birds following in behind these herds and enjoying the nutrients. Like the turkeys, they eat the insects and stuff that are attracted to the manure of our grass-fed beef, and they also get to enjoy shorter grass because they're smaller animals. They have a hard time walking through really tall grass. The grass-fed beef, they make it a little shorter, and then they leave their manure behind, and then the turkeys follow 3 days later. They eat the insects that are attracted to that manure. They walk through shorter grass, and they add their own manure to the mix, which is unique because it's very high in nitrogen, and the grass really thrives off that nitrogen, which then in return benefits the steers once they come back around of this in this rotational grazing system. So then, and then like also like the pork is managed in a similar way where they're rotationally grazed, and also like the seafood that we produce, it's all got like an MSC rating, which is basically a proof of sustainability, where these fisheries, they won't overfish when populations are low. They'll wait for it to rebound, and they also fish in ways that don't damage the this the ocean floors or the sea in some way or shape or another. So it's every basically all the more products we sell, the more that we improve welfare, the more that we improve sustainability. So it's I love it because it's a self-sustaining system. It doesn't rely on donations. It is basically the more money we make, the more of an improvement that we make on the environment, on welfare. It's the goals are very much aligned.
I love it. I love it. This is great. So, I really thank you for coming on the show today. And before we go, is there anything else that you'd like to leave your listeners with?
The main message I always try to leave people with is to vote with your food dollars. The best way, the most impactful way to in make a change in agriculture is through supply and demand. So if you want to see a change in agriculture, make sure you're voting with your food dollars, and that's the best way to make that change happen. That's the best way to make a difference and grow that grassroots movement of regenerative agriculture. And like it's like if you want to see more food produced that's nutrient dense, that improves the environment, that improves animal welfare, make sure you're shopping that and you're voting for that way of farming to continue. And then also like the more we do it, the more that movement grows over time, there will be more efficiencies. There will be improvements in the scale and like the overall cost of those products.
It's a very exciting topic because I love when it comes to health, I get very into it, because it's so important that we feed our bodies with healthy foods and how it impacts our health and, like you said, our longevity, it's something that we really need to take more seriously because what we put in our body really affects our mind, our body, and our health and longevity. So, I thank you very much for coming on the show and sharing all this information. And I think the future will have, regenerative agriculture in it, and it's going to become more and more and more popular as time goes on because I think people are going to crave more for it and people already are, having a strong interest in healthier eating, healthier foods, where they get in their foods, what's in the foods. So people are becoming more cautious. So we definitely are in the right we're in the right step, in the right path. So, it's people like you who are helping make this happen. So thank you so much for coming on the show and thank you for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. You have a great day.
Thank you.